Okay, everybody, we ready to start? Okay, welcome to Stories of Swami Kriyananda, and let's begin with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Great Masters, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Paramahansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, Friend and Guide Swami Kriyananda, humbly we bow before you all, Divine Mother, be with us this evening. Fill us with your spirit. Help us to feel your presence in all that we do, all that we say, and all that we speak. We are thy children. Bring us home. Om peace. For those of you who have been here past weeks, we've heard from lots of great people, heard lots of great stories. We have three more speakers, and Rose is going to start us off tonight. You're welcome to stay there, or you can come up here, and that way we can all look at you, and you can look at us a little more easily. And then we'll have, Tracy, you can go ahead and sit here. And then we'll have an opportunity for questions here when Rose finishes in about a half hour-ish or so.
Yeah, within that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Good evening. Nice to see you all. I guess sort of to start with a little bit of my story related to Ananda. I grew up with the teachings in our home, and we had a meditation group in Sonoma County for many years. And so I remember as a child going up to Ananda, and I remember seeing Swami give a satsang in the Crystal Hermitage. And I remember feeling as though it was raining rainbows. That's the only image. I don't remember what he said. I don't remember who was there. I don't remember how old I was. But it was raining rainbow light. So that I think that's my first memory, but I don't have the strongest memory early. I don't remember all the details. So I don't remember younger times. But in my life, when I was in high school, I wanted to live up at Ananda Village, and so I decided to go to the school there. They were starting a high school, so my family still was in Sonoma County, and I moved up there to go to the school and live up there. And the second year of our school, the third year, we ended up living in Italy for 7 months out of the year. And it was the time when Swami Kriyananda was also in Italy. So that's when my first memories of him really begin. So every Saturday he'd do a satsang, and we all got to go to these satsangs and sit and listen. And I tried to listen to the translation, but I'm very much preferred just putting on the headset, taking off the headset and just listening to him speak Italian, because I had no idea what he was saying, but it had the vibration of love. And over the years, I've sort of noticed even now, even though he's passed, Swami is different in different countries. Swami is different in Italy. He's different to me, and somehow more heart quality comes through. And so I just tuned into that heart quality in Assisi often in those talks and would just meditate in the back, maybe start learning a little bit of Italian. And one day, one of the first encounters there in Italy, there was a few, but one that sticks in my mind, I was hitchhiking. And I've never before hitchhiked, and I've never since hitchhiked, but I was with a friend, and I was in high school, and so we were, I don't know what we were doing, but we didn't have cars, so we couldn't usually go anywhere, and we decided to try to go to town and try to come back. So on our way back, We had our thumbs out, and this car was zooming along the road and pulled over, and it was Swami. And I was like, wow, that's wonderful. I was maybe a little sheepish because our guru, Yogananda, told us not to hitchhike. And here I was doing it. And Swami picked us up. And he asked us about what kind of music teenagers listen to nowadays. Back then, I listened to him very often. I'm not sure if I shared that or not. I'm not sure what I said. But then I do remember how fast he was driving. And I do remember gripping the side of the car. And I do remember him saying, make sure to emulate my good qualities, not my bad ones. Which has helped me in my particular quest and understanding of my path over the years to see that I think he was born free and not creating more karma. But still, he was saying, the little personality traits in me that don't serve you, don't worry about those. Just because I drive fast, don't drive fast. Just because I, you know, what in me inspires you is what I took from that. What in me brings you closer to God and really emulates how you want to live your life? And that gave me a lot of freedom in moving forward and approaching the path, and kind of helped me to realize, don't approach it with blind obedience, because in the past, perhaps in past lives or whatever, that's been a way of approaching spirituality with sort of, okay, my guru does this, so this is what I do without question. But he was saying, it's okay to think about what you copy on this spiritual path. So that was a very important lesson for me in my teenage years with Swami. And then soon after that, they were doing a tour of the oratorio all over Italy through lots and lots of cities for many days. And we decided to piggyback on the tour. So everybody was in this big bus, and I think Swami was even on that bus, but since I wasn't, I'm not sure. And we followed on trains and stayed in youth hostels, and they stayed in these really pretty hotels, and we followed along, and we got there, and we went to all these places to sing in the choir, this oratorio all over Italy with Swami. And I love singing, and I have sung a lot of my life, but at that point, I didn't sing solos on stage. And I love to sing, and I kind of did it more privately. And so one day, I would sing the songs probably when I wasn't even realizing I was singing them. But one night, a lot of the sopranos were sick, and there were a lot of songs to get through that night in this big church. And someone heard me singing one of the songs and said, oh, she can sing that song because I'm too sick to sing, to our choir director at the time, Agni. And so he said, okay, well, it's starting in an hour. Can you come practice the song with me and will you sing it? And I said, sure, I'll sing it. Sure, I'll sing it. But I was nervous because Swami was going to be in the front row and I didn't want to mess up his music right in front of him. I didn't want to mess up his music right in front of him. And so I was starting to get pretty nervous. And it is a big church, and it was a big choir, and I'd never done a solo like that before. And so before that solo, I was in the front row, and I was thinking these thoughts. And I know that the thoughts that then came must have come from Swami, because what came when I was thinking the thoughts, oh my goodness, if I mess this up, what will he think of me? What came to the response of that small thought was, if I am who someone that you care that much to offer to and to please, do you think I would support you any less if you made a mistake? I would support you even more. And so my fear dissolved. Oh, I mean, there was still some, but dramatically dissolved. And sort of the image of this audience here tonight, every single one of them in that room that night, sort of the feelings. And I think that these inspirations were just coming from Swami, because it wasn't coming from me. That sort of what helped me sing that without fear was the image that every single person in that room was Divine Mother. At their essence, that's all they were. And that's all I was singing to. And that's all that was receiving it. And it was like this fear of, I have to please or be good enough, kind of dissolved into, there's nothing to fear. We are already together. All that these friends, that our Divine Mother, want to do is to love. And so I continued to visualize that and ask to be a channel. And that blessing of getting over stage fright in that way, I think, came through his light, him being a channel for that same love. So I continued to be able to sing on that tour and do some more songs. The sopranos were tired, and they were grateful to have somebody step up and say, okay, I'll sing a song. So that was very, very fun and very helpful. And throughout the years now, I get to do a lot of music, and if fear comes up, I try to remember that time and that blessing. So we sang again, Swami and I, when we came back to Assisi, we sang again. He asked if I'd do a duet for him for his birthday, maybe, or a party. And so we practiced Fairy's Lullaby, and I did the melody, and he learned the harmony. Were you there?
Was it summer?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and we sang this, but this is the only time I have ever really, really, really messed up a song on stage. So it's so beautiful. He's just taking all that strange karma or helping me through making mistakes in public. The thought of, can I fail and still be loved? Can I fail and still be loved? And we're up there. We practiced. I went to his apartment and we practiced. And I had all the words. And my family was there. And Jyotish and Devi were there. And I'm singing with Swami. And he said one note. He did something. He said a word in the song in such a way that it sounded really funny to my ears. Right? And I start laughing in the middle of this song. I can't remember. Now I can't imagine how I would ever do that. I've never done it since, just start laughing in the middle of a song. But I did. And I pulled it together and we finished the song. And I just, afterwards, I'm so sorry. And he said, I think it's the nature of young girls to laugh. And we never sang another song together. But there was absolutely no form of a disappointment or you should be different, or, you know, that only exists in separation. And he was saying yet again, that's great that you laugh. You're a young girl. Young girls laugh. And I thought, yeah. Yeah, that's true. But so it was still a hard one, but it was a hard one with a purpose. It was a hard one that was just a little moment of, in our lives, we'll have many opportunities to make fools of ourselves. And how do you do it taking it lightly? It's the nature of humans to make mistakes. It's the nature of humans to learn. And that was, I think, the message behind that one for me in that way. So after Italy, I remember having a reading with Drupada, and I was very, very much involved with Ananda. I think it was probably even more so in my entire life was that time in Italy. I took Kriya, and I was only 17, and so other karma maybe hadn't hit yet, and probably more than even now. It was just like, that's the only thing I want in the entire world, was just to be in that spot. It was a very deep blessing to be there at that time. And Drupada gave me an astrological reading and said, you'll be going out in the world now more. And I said, no, no, I don't want to. And he said, it's okay, it's for learning, it's okay. And so soon after that, I did. There wasn't high school offered the next year at the village. So I moved to Sonoma County with some friends who were, Michael Gornick was starting a community, and I needed to go to school somewhere. So I moved in with them in Sonoma County. And soon after that, I was at a party for some occasion. The brain, these memories, they're not all there, but the important ones are. And Swami asked me if I would. They were from the oratorio tour. They were going to do a small group of singers travel around Italy for 8 months. And he asked if I would join that group, which ended up being the Gamows and David, our choir director from Portland, E.B., and the Nannies. And I said, no, sir, I'm going to college. And he said, okay. So I did. I went to college. And I majored in theater, of all things. And it was very fun, and it balanced important things in me. But there wasn't a lot of space to focus on my spiritual life. I, just like my chart said, it was like another kind of karma came in, and I chose something else. And during school, I kind of thought, I don't know if I'd ever go back to Ananda. I don't know if I'd ever go back to Ananda. And I wasn't planning to. And so my senior year, I was asked to do the play, Swami's play. I was asked to do a play. That's all I was doing was plays. And theater was my focus now. And Swami asked if I'd do theater at Ananda. And well, someone else asked first, and I said no. And then I said maybe. And then Swami asked through another person. And I said, you know, it really doesn't work to do a play at Ananda Village. When this is my senior year, I don't have a car, I don't live in Ananda Village, and it would be corresponding with other plays I'm in Santa Cruz, so no, I can't do that. I can't do it. And then he said, please, it's my birthday. And I said, okay, I deeply respect this saint enough to stop and think about this, but I also am not sure that I want this to be my life. So I'm going to make a deal with you, Divine Mother, because it was really made no logical sense to be leaving school at that time often, traveling on the train and the bus to Ananda Village to practice this play when I was really deep in elbows in work at school. And so I said, all right, I trust him enough to do this, but if it fails, if this doesn't work for me, if it makes me do bad in my classes or feel stressed, then I will never come back to Ananda. And if this is a useful thing, somebody, Swamiji, asking me to do this, then I will. And so it was interesting to me that Swami asked me if I would go on the choir tour, and I said, no, I'm going to school. And at the end of school, he asked me something again, right? So I said, okay, I'll. It's almost like he totally respected that choice. Okay, you're out of my aura for 4 years. But at the end of that time, he invited me back in. And I said, okay, let's see what happens. Imagine that. Imagine that. The gall, the... But yeah, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure. I didn't know. And so I said, let's see what happens, Divine Mother. That's the thing. Is this something that I can safely, is this a place where blind obedience, it was kind of about that, can I trust this when it makes no sense? Can I give my life to this when I'm not sure? And so all these questions. So, so I did, I started the practices, and in Santa Cruz I was doing this play, which was I had a lead role in this play that was very outward and focusing on the physical. And I'd do those rehearsals and get specific direction. And then I'd go up to the village, and my director would say, yeah, but more from your center. And yeah, but more from inner joy. And so that was like a very stark comparison. You see Santa Cruz musical production and a spiritual production at Ananda Village. And so that was really fun to try on. And so Swami invited me back into the teachings through the only thing I was interested in at that time in my life and said, here, try on acting from your center. And here, try on acting from your ego. What does that feel like? Which one do you like? I mean, that's incredible. That's miraculous to me. But so I did, and we did the play, and it wasn't no huge revelations, only in that it was fun, and I was glad I was doing it, and everything was working smoothly, and the play happened, and I was glad I did it, and I had a weekend to write my senior seminar paper, which I hadn't started. So I was going home, and I was glad I did it, and I felt inspired, and I felt connected, but I needed to focus now. And I was starting to get sick. I was going to bed with a cold. I could feel it in my head and my throat. But I was still really glad I did it. There was no part of me. My life was a little bit off kilter, but me and Divine Mother and Swami were all on good terms. It was a good choice. So I woke up, bolt up at 7 a.m., feeling completely well, but more than well, I felt like something was happening, like there was some sort of blessing happening. And the phone rang. I didn't wake up like that at 7 a.m. in college. That was not a normal feeling to just wake up like refreshed and vibrant, like something was happening. And the phone rang. I woke up first, and then the phone rang. And it was Devi, and she said, Swami wants to see you. Will you come to Palo Alto? And I said, Devi, I have 2 days to write my senior seminar paper, and I haven't started. And she said, uh-huh. And I said, what would you do? And she said, I would come to Palo Alto. And I said, okay, it's too late. Now I'm in this now. So we are taking this to the finish line. So I got in a car that I was borrowing, and I came down from Santa Cruz to Palo Alto. I think David was there. I don't know if he remembers this at all. But for me, it was quite important. And a bunch of the group leaders were having lunch with Swami before he was flying back to Italy, I think, in 108, here at the community. And I really, throughout my years of college, had really separated myself energetically. There was There was a few things that came up for me, and I just did. And so I walked into this room, and I felt timid to be around all these group leaders and Swamiji. Like, why am I here? And will they tell how out of tune I am? And will they judge me for it? And of course not, because like Swami was trying to teach me when I was singing in front of the audience, if these friends are who you think they are, if you should look up to them, it's because they're true friends, and it's because they want to support those around them. And so that was the only thing I felt from that entire room. I was anxious to go in there, and I just felt just these great souls and Swami were just friends. They were just purely supportive and caring friends, which is magical, because great souls can look like just the mom and pop next door, that they have great power, but that great power is often associated with the ability to be a true friend to everyone. That is great power. And so that's what Swami showed me that day in many ways. But we were sitting at the table and everyone was eating. And then in the middle of eating and some other discussion, Swami looked at me and, you know, everyone's there and said, God's love for us is unconditional. He doesn't want anything in return. You know, held our spoons for a minute. Okay. And then we kept eating. And I sat with that for a while. And then he said, okay, let's go upstairs. And he started giving me input on my character. You know, you should play your character like this, or like this, or play your character like this. But it was the way that he could tell me how to play my life character without any rebellion from my ego. So he was giving me direction. He's being my director. And I was able to receive it because it's about my character, right? I probably, hopefully, would have received it anyway, but that was a surefire way that there'd be no blockages. Very, very wise. And then he just blessed me. But it was just energetically at first, in that his blessing was seeing who I truly was. I'd done a lot of different things in one life. I felt like I'd been in two different boats energetically. And through all of that, he just looked at me and saw who I truly was, my soul nature, and who I could be, my aspiration, who I truly could be, and who I yearned to be. And I started crying, and he blessed me here, as though to say, it's okay to feel deeply, but offer it here. Offer that inspiration, feeling touched by recognizing that soul remembrance. Put it here. And that has helped me more than almost anything this lifetime, remembering to put the feelings of my heart here. And then that was it, and he went to Italy. So those are my Swamiji stories. Well, thank you. Oh, and I'm still here. And I got an A on my paper. I did. I came home. I felt great. I stayed up for a couple nights, and it was great, and I got an A. So it was definitely worth it. I wrote it on theories of theatrical, all these philosophers who wrote about how to perform, and I don't even remember. I don't remember their exact names, and like, but it was performance through the 19th century and like how it influenced our, yeah, I don't know. Useless. Yeah. Useless. Yeah. Are there any questions? Oh, really?
And it was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is... And then Stephen explained to me who you were. And it was like what you said. You know, she was at Ananda, and then, oh, she went to college, and who knew what was going to... But then I remember you coming into the peace treaty, and Stephen was like, oh, do you remember? This is like... You know, so it's like I had this little rose... before I ever knew you. So it's just very sweet because I saw those different vibrations with that. Yeah.
Just, yeah.
So lovely to hear the story with you and Swami.
I would like to be probably said already.
So what I'm getting from you is that last visit with Swami kind of put you over the edge to go back to Ananda. Is that more or less?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he responded, good.
Well, it took a little effort on his part.
No, but I appreciate the fact that you didn't just go along, oh, Swami said it, I should do it. You know, you used your own ideas too. And I think he appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the feeling I get.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you have a sense of what you would have done had he not, for lack of a better word, intervened?
Well, it's something that I still want to do in some balance, but I wanted to go woof. That sounds funny. Which means Worldwide Organization of Organic Farms. I wanted to work on farms throughout the country and learn about community and how people were living in community sustainably, which is also a good thing. I mean, it wasn't... Yeah. Wasn't anything crazy. It was just, yeah.
Just not Ananda.
Just not Ananda, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was great.
Thanks okay. for being here.
Okay. Gashama, are you ready? Let's put it on mute.
Hi, I'm Gashama. So my family came to Ananda Village when I was quite young. My parents actually learned about Paramhansa Yogananda through my father's parents. They had read the AY, they were connected with SRF. And my parents first started exploring these teachings through SRF, but they felt really strongly that they wanted to be part of community. They wanted to help create World Brotherhood colonies, and they weren't finding their connection with that through SRF. They'd basically gotten the feedback that, well, we're not doing that right now, so here are some other options, but sorry. And so I'm not exactly sure how, but they found out that there was a direct disciple near our area. We were living in Auburn, California at that time, which is about half hour, 45 minutes, maybe an hour from Ananda Village, an hour. And they went to a class or a presentation that Swami had done, and they were just kind of checking things out. And so one of the first visits up to Ananda Village, I don't know who was touring them, but my dad tells the story of walking across the meadow from the expanding light. And my mom and the person giving the tour were walking ahead, and I was a toddler at that point, so I was on my dad's shoulders. And Swami wasn't there, but Ananda is Swami. And so he heard my mom laugh in a way that he'd never heard her laugugh before. And it was completely pure. There was no cynicism in it. There was no... It was just pure and joyful. And he said in that moment, he felt like if there is any place on the world that can elicit that kind of a genuine, deep, beautiful response, I need to be a part of it. I need to be there. So that was kind of the moment where my family really started visiting Ananda and trying to find out if this was their place. And the second time they came, I believe it was the second time, they were talking with Padma, who is one of the directors at Ananda Seattle in Washington. And there was going to be a big family party at Crystal Hermitage. There's a swimming pool. They were having a big community gathering there, and children were coming, families were coming. They were going to have a pool party. And she had invited my father to come, and he was thrilled. Yes, of course, we would love to be there. Swami walked up right at that moment, and it was the first time that my parents were being introduced personally to Swami. And Padma said, you know, I've just invited them to the pool party at Crystal Hermitage. And he looked at my dad and he said, I'm so sorry. It's only for community members. And my dad's heart sank. But he just somehow energetically pulled himself together and responded, I completely understand. And Swami looked at him and said, well, in that case, you should come. But always working with energy and not necessarily what it looks like on the surface. So my personal first memory of Swami is at the meditation retreat. And I was walking with my grandmother. I think they were up visiting because they were not living at Ananda Village at that point. And Swami was just walking down the road, and he had on his hat, and he had a walking stick, I think, of some sort. And I have no idea how old I was, except that I must have been maybe 4 or 5. I'm not sure. And it was just a very friendly interaction. He said, "Oh, how is my little Erica?" I was Erica at that point. And it just, it stuck with me as a, we're all family. You know, we're all, we belong to each other. And I think that's true of everyone who has found their way into Master's family and the Ananda family. I didn't have a lot of face-to-face time with Swami, although I spent a lot of my childhood and teenage years at Ananda Village and in various communities. I lived down here some when I was young. My family lived in Assisi a little bit when I was young, but mostly at Ananda Village. So my next real vivid memory of him, aside from just, you know, seeing him at various functions and things, was just out of college, actually. We were at Crystal Hermitage, and there was a big satsang. I have no idea what the event was, but Swami was going to share with people in the dome. And my parents brought me down again after Swami had arrived, and he was greeting a few people, and they kind of reintroduced me, it felt like. Like, I'd completely gone off the radar for a while. And he asked how old I was. And I was in my early 20s, and I told him, and he looked at me, and he said, "No, you're ageless." And I, at first, I kind of just, okay, yeah, sure, yes, I'm ageless, okay. But it's something that has come up again and again for me as really letting go of identifying with this round, if you will. When I moved here, I feel like that was just in the last few years of his life, but I feel like that's really where a lot of the strong connection grew from, and maybe that was because it was a time when I was ready and I was opening increasingly. But I really feel like he caught me and held me in a way that if he hadn't, I probably would have spun in and spun right back out. I don't think I had the karmic magnetism to really stick it here without that energetic support. And so it looked like, or it felt like to me, the times when he would be visiting here, a real conscious effort to find a little moment of connection whenever possible. And I felt also, I think, held no matter where he was. Let's see which story I want to share first. I have a few of them. So I'm a teacher here at the Living Wisdom School. I teach second grade. One of the last times that Swami was here in the Bay Area, every time he came, he made an effort to come to the school and to give energy to not only the faculty, but also the students. And he came for a satsang one morning, and he sat right there. And all of the children, in preparation for that, we talked about really who he is. And most of the children in the school here have no conscious connection with Ananda, Swami, Yogananda, but their families are drawn for whatever reason to the school community, and the children, I think, draw spiritually from it to whatever degree they're able. But we talked about, at least, you know, here's one reason why we can be extremely grateful for this person. He helped create the school that we have. He's the reason that we are all together every single day. And isn't that something to celebrate? So every child in the school from pre-K through 8th grade wrote him a card or a letter. And we brought them with us. Each class had their cards bundled. And while he was here with us, we presented him with the cards. But they were all, they were tied into nice little packages. And the thought on our part was, it's a gesture. He'll take them with him. Maybe he'll read them. Maybe he'll just energetically bless us as a whole group. He didn't. He stayed. He said, I want to read every card. And he, while we all sat here, 70 some odd students and teachers and some families, you were there. David was there. Rita, did you come? Yeah. He read every note. He asked who the child was. He connected personally with that child, and in some cases he even gave them spiritual advice, which was kind of incredible. He said to one little girl, and it was really interesting because it really was what she was working on actively and what we were working on with her. He got down and he said, my dear, you need to develop concentration. And she was 5. But, I mean, we could see already, this is your work. This is something that will serve you so well if you can build this skill. It was really incredible to just see him tuning in to the individual and planting, you know, whatever seed they needed. So that day, after I left school, I just was filled with a lot of appreciation, and I wrote him a card and wasn't quite sure what to do with it. So I decided that I would take it over to Chela Bhavan, the home where he stayed when he was in the community, and I would just leave it on the doorstep because I didn't want to interfere with his private space. So I walked over and I started to go to the front door, and then I thought, no, that still feels too intrusive. So I went around to the back. And I started walking up the steps, and I was putting the card down, and the door opened. And Asha was there. And I said, well, I just have this little card here. You take it. I'm trying to run down the steps. And she said, no, come in. Come inside. Swami's here, and he'll want to see you. And I said, okay. And I felt really not embarrassed or just like I didn't. Maybe not worthy, I'm not sure. So I came in, and he was in the living room, in his bathrobe, on his computer, just completely relaxed and at home. And he said, oh, come over here and sit down on the couch. I want to talk to you about some things. I said, okay. And the things that he brought up were intensely personal and things that I had no idea that he was aware of. And one of them had to do with a personal relationship that I was working with. And he said, why are you holding back from this? You know, why aren't you doing this? And I said, I have no idea. I really don't know. And he said, well, I think it's okay to go forward. He didn't promise me it would be okay. He didn't promise me it was going to work out in any particular way. But I walked away with this feeling of, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's going to come afterwards. It's important that I move forward now. And I think that's something that I have to really carry with me and pay attention to, that the little moments are what are important, and the energy that I'm bringing to things. Maybe this is true for many of us, I don't know. But as long as we're acting with integrity and moving energy and not letting ourselves be blocked in the moments, whatever course is supposed to happen will happen, and it will find its way. So I feel like he promised me the world, even though he didn't promise me anything. You know, it was really incredible. The other moment that I would share was during a time when our school was going through a fairly difficult period, and he was in town, he invited all of the faculty to come together and just talk about some of the things that were coming up. And I walked in to the room feeling like I was carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders and just an enormous amount of personal worry and heaviness and just feeling completely stuck and confused about what was happening. And I don't really honestly remember hardly anything that people asked him or his responses, but I remember that every time he looked around the room, he was making eye contact with people, and whenever he got to me, it was like he was pulling that heaviness out of my body, I mean, almost physically. And I've heard, I've grown up hearing stories about how saints are able to take on the karmic, the karma of their disciples. But it's one of those things where, at least for me, I would nod and say, yeah, okay. Really? You know, does it really happen like that? But it does, and I can say that now with complete confidence because I felt it. And when I left, it was as if everything was completely different in how I was relating to life and to myself in the particular situation we were in. I felt like a helium balloon. I could just have, you know, floated away. There was no more burden that I had to carry. When he passed away, there was a lot of sadness that came up for me at first. But I also look back and I can feel the several week period after his passing was the time that I felt the closest to him in my entire life. Interestingly, again, this past anniversary of his passing was another experience, more intensely than the last few years, of feeling a connection and just an energy that to me feels like Swami, present where I am. Whenever I had the privilege, usually teaching is such an intense experience that I don't get to go to Ananda Village very often, but we happened to be up in that area for a field trip recently, and we went to Ananda Village just in passing for 20 minutes. We stopped at Crystal Hermitage. We unloaded the vans full of kids, marched them through. It's Swami's home at Ananda Village. They plant tulips in the springtime, and I think this year there were 17,000 planted, and it was exquisite. It was so beautiful. So we went through the gardens, and then we went around to the back where Swami's Moksha Mandir was built, and we took Craig's class of children into the Moksha Mandir for a few minutes. And they were unbelievable. They went in completely silently. They found seats, and some of them meditated. Some of them looked out over the valley. There were a number of hawks or some kind of large birds flying over the valley, and they just watched. You could have heard a pin drop with all 15 of us in the room. And it was a reminder to me every time I walk into that space without thinking, a mantra just starts playing in my mind, and it's thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And it I think that's all I really have to say in terms of the life that we've been given. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kshama. That was moving. We can all feel your emotion, but more than that, the spiritual energy moving through you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back from our break. And David, take us home.
And now what we're trying to do. I first met Erica a couple days into January of 1987. She was about this tall. She was in the... hasn't grown much. Grown up more, but... she was in the kitchen of the Atherton community. We had an ashram there, and that's when I first saw her. I don't know how old, I won't ask you how old you were then, but it's about four. So, been following her around and her exploits with Ananda in the world. And, I don't think if you hadn't told that hitchhiking story, I would ever remember this particular story with Swamiji. It's the road between the Assisi ashram and the town of Assisi. And most people didn't want Swami to drive. Partly because he drove a little quickly. He seemed a little... reckless, and I remember being with him once in the back seat of his car doing that road, going back to the ashram, and it was a curvy road and a mountain road, and he went to pass a car and clipped the very back of the bumper, just nothing major, but just clipped it, and so both cars pulled over. And the person in the car in front that got clipped came out and saw it was Swami. He said, Swamiji! There was somebody, I guess, from the ashram. And so they laughed and enjoyed the moment and went on. But usually Anand, who was one of the spiritual directors there, drove if you were with us, or I would drive. But nobody really wanted Swamiji to drive. But we didn't mind him being the navigator and directing us. But it's interesting because both Kshama and Rose kind of brought up something that is very common and very true about Swamiji. He was like a shepherd to everybody, shepherding their souls, trying to help, trying to suggest, trying to encourage. And really, his whole life was just helping people move forward. Even the story with Kshama's father, Daiva, at that party. I mean, he took the opportunity, maybe it was Daiva's response. Maybe Swami was just kind of playing with him to see what he would do. But he wasn't going to let her father, leave that environment. He never lets anybody leave when he can. He's someone that stays with people forever, always supporting people. Even if they've left Ananda, he will create opportunities to invite them back. It was an amazing expression of divine friendship that he had towards everyone. And the most important person to him was the person in front of him or the person on the phone. He just gave everything he had to everyone who was there. And it didn't even have to be people he knew. It could be in the restaurant. It could be out on the street. It could be a shopkeeper. It didn't really matter. He just was there to share Master's work. And I went to, some of you were there last night, to the Finding Happiness movie, a movie that Swamiji created. And, you know, the one of the things I thought about today, you know, in reference to that movie was just the incredible well-being of everybody in that movie. You know, how they are flourishing, you know, how they have a sense of happiness. And it wasn't just those people, it's all of you, everybody in Palo Alto, everybody in Ananda, anywhere in the world. The well-being that these people express, that we all express, is incredible when you compare, we don't go around comparing, but when you look at what we have within the world of Ananda and what other people are facing in their lives, it doesn't mean that we don't have trials and challenges and that we, you know, have yet merged back into the divine, but it's something that Swami really has brought to us. But Swami would never think of it from that perspective of what I have done or what I have accomplished. It was always what Master wanted from him, what he was doing to serve Yogananda, what he did to help bring the consciousness of his guru, our guru, to us. And that was his work. And he was tireless in that effort. And he never gave up. He never quit. He faced difficult times in his life and challenging times. But he was a warrior for Master. And he always took everything back. You could see him sometimes pausing to hear what Master wanted or to try to remember what Master might have done or Master said in a similar situation. He went back, paused. Sometimes he would change his mind. Sometimes he would just express something. But he never, you know, he didn't always, rarely did he attribute it to Yogananda. He might say something like, and then he'll give a story that Yogananda was involved in, or in a sharing, or an experience, and use that as a way to reference a point of view that he had. But he never, you know, took the point of, well, I know because I lived with Yogananda, or Yogananda told me this, because it put everybody else at a disadvantage, because none of us had the opportunity to be with Yogananda. But his effort was, you know, constantly trying to bring that awareness to us in everything that he did. And so when he, you know, was encouraging Kashama or encouraging Rose, it was just like opening the door. Give it a try. Take a step forward. See if it works for you. You know, taste it and you decide for yourself. And so, you know, we all are here because of the efforts of Swami. But Swami was a huge plate glass window opening himself up for Master to work through him. You know, if Swamiji was someone else and he made choices as to, well, I'll take this of what Yogananda offered, but I won't take this. You know, if he picked and chose and discerned what he wanted to offer, Master would work through him in a much different way, you know, in a much more defined and limited sort of way. But Swamiji approached Master with complete open arms. He was the ultimate disciple of any master. And as a result of that, we were given what Master was. When you see Swami read, you know, some of you had more experience with Swami than others. Some of you maybe never even saw Swami. But it really doesn't matter. Everything you see around you that's called Ananda is the expression of Master coming through Swami. Everything you read or music you listen to is that same consciousness flowing through Swamiji. And so it's all there for us to the degree that we will receive that. And Master used Swami over and over and over again because Swami drew from him over and over and over again. And that's how the Masters work. You know, St. John said, if you shut the door, if you shut me out, I can't come in. Well, that's our work, to emulate really what Swamiji did in his relationship with Yogananda, which is to see how wide open we can become to that same energy. And the more we're there for that, the more we can receive. And we always made choices. You know, Kashama and Rose expressed choices they made along the way. But all of us make choices. We make choices of how we spend this evening. We make choices of, well, you know, Swamiji, for instance, I don't think he ever made a decision based upon what he wanted or what he liked or what he was used to. But do we? Well, of course we do. You know, how else do we make decisions? However, we don't always do it that way. And Swami didn't make choices that way. Because what was important was, what did Master want? What would Master do? And so it was not really the issue of, oh, I like it this way, so let's rearrange things in a certain way, or I want it this way, or I'm used to this. You know, that's our first thought, often our second and third thought. But as disciples and watching Swamiji work, it's like, okay, this is the way I would do it. Now, what would Master do? What would Swami do? And maybe we hear it, maybe we feel it, maybe we remember a story, you know, of Master or Swami, and that can guide us. Or maybe we get a sense of what it is, but we aren't able to do it because I'm not there yet, which is perfectly fine. But the way we tune into, you know, the lessons that all of you have been hearing at these classes for weeks and things like we got this past weekend, is to try to figure out what's the highest expression of our consciousness in everything we do, regardless of whether we can live up to it or honor it at the time. And, you know, we all have probably experiences where we think we failed, but we haven't failed. We just, it didn't work, or it worked to this degree, but not to this degree. And it's perfectly fine. You know, the whole of the spiritual path is just a series of steps. And then, you know, Swamiji sees it all. You know, he saw all of us, you know, for who we are. And he just knew how to work with people and how to work with energy. And just like, you know, talking about a character in a play that, you know, you might be playing, but he's also sharing about qualities or things that we may need to work on. And so if he's talking here, he may be referring to something over here that needs it. And it's just the way he was. And he always figured out, and it wasn't like he thought, okay, this person's in front of me. What does that person need? And how am I going to tell that person what they want? It was just his mission, his work. So it was not an effort. It was not like, how am I going to get through to this person and this person? But he just knew how to connect. and how to share with people. I remember once he was in my living room, and I think this is something that had been developing over time, because I think I got into the habit when he would say things like, you know, I would say like, oh, yeah, I know that, or I understand that, or, oh, I had that idea too. And it was all like, you know, I was really sort of holding him back, because, well, if I already knew it, he couldn't teach me. I didn't even know I was doing it. And, you know, so he had an opportunity, you know, to mention it to me. And I haven't forgotten it since. Because, you know, when Swamiji speaks, you know, we want to listen and we want to do the best we can and to find out what, you know, clogging our system, you know, what's slowing us down, what's keeping us from moving forward. But he did it in so many different ways, you know, with so many people. And he did it so naturally, you wouldn't even know. Even sometimes people would come to him and they would have a question or an issue or wanted advice. And we know this because, you know, we've heard stories of this, but they wouldn't necessarily hear what he had to say because they were so committed to what they wanted, or what they wanted to hear, or what they wanted him to say to him, to the person. And sometimes later, days later, you know, we'd hear, you know, what somebody thought the message was from Swamiji, and it was like, was that person sitting, you know, at the same time in front of Swamiji when we were there listening to what Swamiji was saying? But we're all, you know, we've all done that. We all do it all the time, because we hear what we can hear and what we want to hear. And so we live long lives, and many of them, and we, you know, slowly begin to evolve in these ways. But Swami was, they said he was a warrior, and he did a lot of tapasyas for us. He, many times, like that school event that Kushama described, and there was another major event in the community we had, which Swamiji spoke, and it was one of the largest American events we've ever had. You know, the whole community courtyard was filled, and hundreds of people there. I don't know how we got so many people, you know, and we had music, and we had booths, and but Swami was just sick, and could hardly walk, and he knew he had this event, because obviously whenever Swami was at something, that was the keynote of the whole event. And so we'd feed him tea, and we'd tell him he didn't need to come out, and we, you know, I don't know if Jyotish was there, but one of us would speak and let people know, and people would be a little disappointed, but he never went against his word. You know, if he said he was going to do something, he just simply did it. And when it was time, or a little bit past time, he just got dressed and strapped on, you know, his boots, and he just went out there as if nothing was going on physically with him. And he, you know, gave a beautiful talk, and he met people and came back and basically collapsed back to, you know, his sick state. But he did this often. And it wasn't that he was always sick, but, you know, because he did a lot of traveling, and over time with his age and his health, things would deteriorate some. But even his work, you know, when he went to India, I think he was in his 70s. I remember getting a call to, I was in America, and I can't remember if Asha was there or not in India, in Italy. And I got a call that Swami wanted for Dura and I to come to Italy because he wanted to send us to India and to start a work. And so within a few days, Vidura and I flew over to Italy, and Swami met us. I flew into Rome and got a train to Assisi, and Swami met us at the train station. I mean, he was ready to go, and we had just spent, you know, 20 hours in transportation getting there. And we immediately went out for dinner, and he just started talking about India and the work that was needed there, and that he felt like, you know, it was the time. And literally a day or two later, Vidura and I had our instructions from Swamiji on our way to Delhi by way of Istanbul. And every day we called Swami, you know, because he wanted to know what was the... He wanted us to find an ashram for him, for the work. And he knew that part of the Gorgon, the area that he thought was the best area to be in, it's like a suburb of Delhi. And so we just scoured the grounds. We had a contact that Swamiji knew, and we connected with him, and we just devoured the city and the rural area around it, calling Swami every night. Well, we're looking at this, and we've got this building, and this is how many rooms, and this is... and finally, we told Swami, about a week later, we think we found the place. And literally, a few days later, Swamiji arrived, and the work began. And the same ashram that we found, you know, is still the central ashram, or the oldest ashram. I don't know if it's still the... I think it's still the core, where the work still carries on. But when, you know, at his age, you know, it didn't matter. You know, it wasn't like he's trying to preserve himself. He had a work to do and a mission to do, and he went out and just did what was necessary to get it done. You know, there are many stories of his illnesses and issues he had and operations he had. But some of his best work came, you know, in times when he was, you know, physically challenged. But that was our Swami. And that's how he worked. But everything that he did is a lesson for us. And, you know, he did things with intention, and he thought about things. You know, for instance, I mentioned a year ago that I helped put on his wedding. When he got married at Ananda Village, he wanted me to be the coordinator. And there were a lot of things to be worked out, because there were about 800 people that came to Ananda Village for that weekend. So you can imagine the hugeness of it. And you can just take any issue like parking, and that's like huge. And then, you know, refrigeration. But I would sit with Rosanna and Swamiji, and he knew that what was going to be created was going to be something that would live for a long time, like everything else that he did. And so there is a personal issue of Swamiji and Rosanna and, you know, making all that work for them. But there is the issue of the legacy of that wedding, and particularly that ceremony. You know, all the other things, you know, are mostly forgotten in terms of, you know, the things that went on that weekend. But, you know, what is remembered, and some of you have benefited from it or may benefit in the future from it, you know, the wedding ceremony. And so he, you know, there was you know, extremely important. And he wrote music for it. And, you know, he would talk about it and everything else. Because he was involved in, but not the details, except for the ceremony itself. The details, you just sort of, David, you figure it out. But so that's, you know, was his work, because he was taking Master through this ceremony, expressing it so that we could have it going forward. So it was, you know, the way he worked, and it was, I think I shared with you the story. This is an interesting story, and it's interesting because there are a lot of you have been involved with Ananda for a while, and your leaders, and you know, the whole issue with the community and the foundation of our community, and how he worked with that. And, most of you know it. We actually bought this community that we have now in 1989. But for a number of years, we worked to find a place. We had different ashrams in the local area in Los Altos Hills, Atherton, Los Altos Hills, Palo Alto. But we knew we needed something larger. And we talked to Swami about just the fact that we needed something bigger. And we were looking at apartment complexes. And we spent a lot of time looking, and because there aren't that many apartments at any given time that are available, and there weren't that many that were of the size we wanted. Originally, we thought we needed like a maybe a 20, 24-unit complex for the people. And then as more and more people got interested in the vision, you know, maybe 36 or 48 people. And eventually we ended up getting a complex for 72 people, 72 units. And hard work finding the money for it, finding investors who would loan or invest, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. That, you know, it was about a $5 million purchase. And coming up with the down payment was huge. And we would meet, you know, a group about this size, maybe a little smaller. And, you know, we'd get out a whiteboard and we'd write down, well, we've got this amount from this person and this amount. And we add it up. It didn't work. So let's do it again. And so every meeting we did went through all of that. And finally, without the details, it came through. We were close enough anyway. And so people at Ananda Village knew we were moving in this direction. It was a huge project. There were no communities like this. There were ashrams where you would just rent a large house and people would live in it and pay rent. And, you know, it was pretty simple. But this was much bigger. And we were getting very close to signing the papers and finishing the deal, and we got all the investors. And Asha was in Ananda Village this weekend, one weekend, and called me on a Saturday morning and said that people here and Swami wanted to talk about this project. And she was, you know, expressed how worried she was and how difficult it was, you know, this meeting was going to be. And so it was a rainy, cold, dark day, and I just got in the car and drove to Ananda Village and drove to Swami's house and the dome, and everybody was there, and everybody being like 20 of the primary leaders of Ananda Village at the time, everyone that you would think of or no, they were there, unless they are now heads of colonies or in India or Europe or wherever. They were all there. And Asha said to me, I'm not going to say anything. You just do. You just talk. So I'm sitting on the couch, you know, and Swamiji was there, and he came upstairs. And they just all talked about their apprehensions about the project, how challenging it is, how big it was, legal ramifications, financial ramifications. What if we, Ash and I, were to leave? What if there was this kind of difficulty and that kind of difficulty? And everything that everybody was concerned, because a $5 million purchase was probably worth what Ananda was worth worldwide at that time, literally. Because it was just, it was big then. It's much bigger now. But and it was challenging, you know, because I would try to answer the questions, everybody, you know, what we were thinking. And none of our thoughts had anything to do with, well, there's always Ananda Village to bail us out, or there's always all of Ananda that will come to our support, or, you know, legally, if we had to, we could just turn it over to Ananda Village. It was, Ananda Village wasn't really even talked about in our plans. You know, we had to make it work within the context of who we were, what we were, and the resources we had. So I would try to explain it, you know, with all the different questions. Swamiji never said a word during all of this. And so that went on for like 45 minutes. Well, what if, and but, and how come, and then there was a pause, and I said, well, let me explain to you what we were trying to do. And none of it had to do with, well, we wanted the biggest urban community, or we wanted the most expensive Ananda project, or anything like that. And I just talked about where we were spiritually, where the devotees were who were down here, what was needed for their work, for their spiritual growth, and just kind of talked about that and talked about the state of our spiritual development in Palo Alto. And then there was this great silence. And then Swamiji, he never said a word up to this point. And then Swamiji said, I think we should consider this project. And slowly other people kind of, because, you know, if Swami spoke, he carried a lot of weight. But Swami never judged things or evaluated things or determined the truth by how many people thought this way versus how many people thought that way. You know, Swami was always trying to find the truth of the matter in God versus, oh, well, if all these people are thinking that, or there are this many people that have this point of view, which was not a very positive point of view towards this project, maybe I should just go along with it. So when he, you know, spoke and said a few words, people began to reconsider and, you know, thought about it a little more and kind of wavered with their points of view. And eventually, the project got approved. But it got approved for what I think were a couple reasons, and they're important reasons. One is, I think he appreciated the fact that I didn't defend the project by saying, but we spent so much time on it. We've had so many meetings. We visited, you know, went to so many apartment complexes. Oh, we told you what was happening. We tried to keep you informed of the progress, you know, of sort of defending it from more of a egoic point of view versus defending the project from a point of view of spiritual correctness and dharma as we saw it. I think he also saw that it was important for, and as you know Swami, to the degree you know Swami, you would see this right away, but he was always someone that wanted to move Ananda forward, that he was always looking for creative expressions, and he was always looking for ideas and energy that moved beyond whatever simply already existed. If it already existed, what's next? And so I think he saw this project as what is next. I also think he didn't want decisions made at Ananda, and I'm not talking about just Ananda Village, but at Ananda based simply upon legal concerns or financial concerns. You know, he wanted the spiritual energy and the power of that to be first and foremost. If that didn't hold weight, the rest, you know, had more power and influence. But if the spiritual movement and the force of the energy going towards a light was greater than money and all these different issues, he never let that hold him back. I mean, yes, there was common sense involved, but I think there was a lesson, you know, for all of us to weigh things first and foremost from what is most important. You know, and the first most important is the individual spiritual energy of each person. And then the spiritual power and energy that, you know, to express Master's work, you know, follow that. But it was, you know, he always sort of was someone who pointed towards the light first. He pointed towards, you know, where the truth is coming from. And other things, if they didn't fall into that, needed to take their rightful place, which was a step back, and to see if this energy had legs and could move forward. And then other things get worked out, and you can figure out money issues later, and, you know, legal concerns. I mean, we didn't do anything illegal, you just don't want to get into legal issues, you know, later on. But if we didn't have the right perspective on things, it wasn't going to be any good anyway. And so there are a lot of lessons in that. And Swami was always there, giving the perspective that was needed to keep us moving forward and keep us focused on what was most important. But he would do that with individuals, just like he would do it with, in this case, Ananda Palo Alto. So it's, you know, he was undaunted by negativity or undaunted by points of view that weren't really honoring principles that he felt Master would have supported if Master were here. And that's, you know, for all of us, it's like, first principles, and, you know, what's most important. We may not, as I said, always be able to hold to it, but we want to try to always find it. And once we find it, then we know where we're going. We may do a lot of crisscrossing and going in circles getting there, but if we don't know where we're going, whether it's personally or with what we are in charge of or have influence over, then we end up not ending up where we want to be. So, any questions or thoughts?
I've heard about meetings being kind of bogged down by the, I don't know if I should call it negative, but that's the only word I can think of, talk, and that it's quickly stopped. Hmm. And so this story is really, What I'm wondering is, did so many people learn from this that from after that projects were able to go ahead, you know, without all of the, well, what if this happens, what if that happens, or is it always start out like that?
I would assume, because we were dealing with the best and the brightest of Ananda, there are a lot of lessons that were there for all of us. You know, when it's you and your responsibility for the money or your responsibility for the people, you know, there's a heavier weight on it than if you are in the or just outside of that.
Yeah.
But you know, everybody at Ananda, even all the leaders of Ananda, present tense, you know, we're all different. And we all have different ways of doing things and different ways of responding to negativity, or not even negativity, just challenges that are in front of us. Pardon me?
Change.
And, you know, we do it differently and we learn and we muddle through sometimes, but all of us, and all of us are learning from Swami's example. And, you know, Swami referred to this meeting many times. Not, you know, only, as he said, about 20 people were there. But he referred to the meeting many times as an example. He was kind of using me, but he was more than me. He was using an example of right attitude and right consciousness and the right way to approach things and how to face difficulties, because he, you know, had that constantly in his life. And anyone that's, you know, would be in the position that I'm in, or Krishama's father is in, or, you know, other people, you know, we're faced with it all the time to be able to build this work, because we operate on low budgets, and sometimes so low we don't even keep budgets. and, you know, people aren't used to change and to new ways of thinking, so, which is fine. It's not like, you know, it's anyone's problem or to their detriment. It's just part of working with people. And not everybody, you know, can see the same thing or are ready to see it or are bold enough to, you know, put their energy behind it. But that's all right too, because, you know, there's a vanguard of energy that pushes things forward, which Swami has been the leader of for forever. And you need a whole team of people supporting that afterwards. And so many times things, you know, got pushed forward because Swami saw the righteousness behind it. And I can't tell you how many times the great leaders of Ananda, you know, were on different sides of things than Swami was, and then things changed, and, you know. You know, he just needed to, sometimes even against the points of view of some of us, you know, major leaders. It just, these are things that just happen. But if you know where the truth lies, or when you know that, you need to, you know, start making that, moving forward. So, but you have to come, you know, it's if you've ever gone, all of you have been in the ocean, and you know that you have a lot of waves sometimes, and I remember going scuba diving once, and you're on a boat, and it was sort of your ultimate ugly day in paradise, and there were waves, and it was cool, and raining, and we got on our gear, and it was a group of people, we were not a group, we were just part of the trip. But, you know, as soon as you get under the water, you know, a few feet, 10 feet under the water, everything is calm and quiet. And you can look up and you can see the waves and the rain. But when you're in that state of calmness underneath there, you can view what's happening with discernment and sometimes humility and, you know, the qualities that begin to separate the conflict and the negativity and the challenges from the type of consciousness that can overcome that. When you're in the waves and being pelted by rain and you have the cool wind blowing over you, that's what you're involved in. But if you can pull back and see where the truth lies, you know, where that steady state of super consciousness is, then you can begin to work with the difficulties and challenges. If you're only on the waves of the sea, you get dashed around, you know, in different ways. So, you know, all of us need to find that place of calmness. And this is where Swami came from in everything that he did. Because his challenges, you know, I can talk about different challenges and situations maybe in Palo Alto or in my life, but Swamiji had, you know, the weight of Ananda worldwide and all that that meant. And he just calmly went through helped people find ways to be, to behave accordingly. So that was really the beauty that Swami brought to us, just how to live in Master's light, and then how to behave in the right attitudes from there. So thank you all.
Thank you so much, David. Thank you so much, everybody who has participated. Thank you for bringing us home, so to speak. It's been a great series, hearing all of these great stories, all of these very personal stories that of Swami, and hearing how we can bring them into our own individual lives. Our spiritual lives, our everyday lives, and thank you all. So enjoy the rest of your evening and the rest of your life.
Okay. Bye-bye.